My father, Michael, mother, Mathilde, sister, Beate, and I lived in a three-bedroom apartment in the middle-class district of Bogenhausen, on the then outskirts of Munich, where I was born in February 1921. My father was a senior partner in the law firm Kanzlei Siegel, founded in the 1890s by his uncle Leopold Siegel. The law firm was well known and professionally highly thought of, with Jewish as well as many non-Jewish clients, including members of the royal Wittelsbach family. Of course, I loved my parents, greatly enjoyed my childhood, notwithstanding the occasional clip around the ear or Watschen in good Bavarian dialect. My interests were rather on the practical side of life and to a lesser degree in doing my school homework. In my early teens, I constructed crystal radio sets, amongst other things. On one occasion, I placed a hidden microphone in the kitchen so that I could hear what our cook was saying when she talked to herself, as was her habit. For that, I got a well-deserved Watschen. I was always hugely keen to visit our large Deutsches Museum, an amalgam of a science and natural history museum. I was fascinated by the walk-in submarine, a superb reconstruction of a colliery with dummy miners working in dim light, crouching in narrow shafts, a salt mine, a huge display of aeroplanes, airship models and cars, an X-ray demonstration booth and much more. I would like to think that I was just a normal boy who mixed largely but certainly not exclusively with Jewish friends. After around 1935, my visits to the Deutsches Museum and other places of interest, such as to our local ice skating rink, became few and far between, because entry for Jews was either unwelcome or forbidden, displayed on large notices at entrance doors. My father remained a lifelong optimist. In early 1933, he held the sincere belief, rather like the majority of other German Jews at the time, that Hitler and his regime were a transitory phenomenon and would soon be remembered as an aberration in German political history. During the first few days of March 1933, plate glass windows of Jewish-owned shops and stores throughout Germany were targeted and smashed by groups of uniformed Nazis. The owner of a prominent store in Munich was Max Uhlfelder, the Jewish founder of Kaufhaus Uhlfelder, located in the city center. Uhlfelder himself had been taken into Schutzhaft, protective custody, a day or two earlier in the infamous Dachau concentration camp, an arrest which at the time was technically still illegal. My father, as Uhlfelder's attorney, made an appointment at the Munich police headquarters in order to lodge a complaint about the detention of his client. The chief of police at that time was the notorious Heinrich Himmler, who had recruited SA strongmen for what was euphemistically described as auxiliary police. When my father arrived at the police headquarters on March 10, 1933, he was directed to a basement room where he was mercilessly and ruthlessly beaten up by an SA troop. He had several teeth knocked out and received a perforated eardrum. Following this violent assault, the legs of his pants were cut off above the knee, and he was marched, still wearing his long johns, barefoot and bleeding from the mouth through the town center of Munich, surrounded on four sides by rifle-carrying SA thugs. A board had been hung around my father's neck with the words, "I am a Jew. I will never again complain to the police." When the march reached Munich's main rail terminus, the laughing Nazis said to my traumatized father, "You can go home now." If they thought they'd been able to vilify my father, they were spectacularly mistaken. Heinrich Sanden, a then out-of-work freelance professional photojournalist, saw this quite extraordinary event whilst sitting in a tram. He took two photographs of this incident in two adjoining locations. No German newspaper would have dared publish these photographs at that time. One of the two photographs was first published on the front page of the Washington Times on March 23, 1933. These photographs have since been published many times throughout the world and are still used today in school textbooks, on TV, as well as on the internet. This outrage against a lawyer acting on behalf of his client might have persuaded others to emigrate without delay. However, my father remained convinced that this was an isolated incident and that it was his duty as a lawyer and good citizen to remain in Germany. Following 4 years at elementary school at Gebele Schule, I was enrolled at the Wilhelmsgymnasium, a state grammar school, which I had to leave after the first year. At this time, a new Nazi law barred Jewish kids from state schools unless their fathers had been frontline soldiers during the 1914-18 World War. My father had lost the thumb on his right hand as a small boy in an accident on a farm. He was declared medically unfit to serve in the army because he could not hold and fire a rifle. Instead, during the winter months, he served as a volunteer army skiing instructor in the Bavarian Army's Jungsturmregiment, for which he received a commendation from Ludwig III, the then King of Bavaria. After the Wilhelmsgymnasium, I became a student for the next 5 years in a private college, the Höhere Handelsschule der Hansaheime. My recollections of my years at that school are not particularly happy or memorable. Jewish boys had to sit in the back row. Most of my examination results were invariably marked adequate, irrespective of merit. The majority of the younger teachers at best totally ignored our very existence. My fellow students, with one or two exceptions, were members of the Hitler Youth Movement. I do not remember political discussions at home or any particular mention of anti-Semitic happenings, as these had become frequent. There was also the constant and genuine fear of our apartment and especially the telephone having been bugged by the secret police.